Welcome to the Building Better Workflows podcast. I am so delighted that you're here and made time to listen. I'm Dr. Leah Gugino, a primary care pediatrician, mental health warrior, and you might know me as the host of the Pediatric Meltdown podcast. In this limited series, we will explore better ways to integrate mental health care into your setting. So get your pen and paper ready for a practice makeover. Hey, listeners. Welcome to Building Better Workflows, and today we're going to be talking about suicide prevention basics. This is so crucial that you have this policy and process in place. We're going to talk about the areas that you need to cover, and if you want more tools to go along with that, there are a bunch of suicide prevention podcasts on Pediatric Meltdown that dive into the details of screening, risk assessment, safety planning, and the workbook that is available at pediatricmeltdown.com has a lot of tools that go right along that I'll be talking about as we go through this episode. So the first thing, do you have a policy in place? Do people know about the policy? When I was working in our healthcare system and started looking at suicide prevention policies, so there really wasn't a concise policy so that people knew what to do when someone is identified with suicidal ideation. So that's the first thing. Do you have a policy? Do people know about the policy? Have they been trained on the policy? And if you don't have a policy, then you need to get started with putting one together. How are you going to do in-office notification? Let's say that a parent calls and says, I was talking to my daughter's friend and she said, hey, I saw something on Instagram and your daughter was talking about sometimes she wishes she wasn't alive. And the parent relates this over the phone to the front desk and says, hey, I'm concerned. What do you do with that? You need to have a process for this in-office notification scripting so that the front desk, the clinical staff know what to say, what to document, and how to alert each other that they may need some backup. So this crisis call protocol is really helpful. And there are ways, one of the most important is to say to the parent or whoever the caller is, I'm so glad you called. I'm here to help. I need to get a little bit of information, and then I'm going to get you connected with the next step. The next step is the clinical staff, who then can, using a template that you set up, get the information to help formulate at least an assessment of how high risk is this situation. Is this a patient that is at imminent high risk that needs to go to the emergency room? Or is this a patient where you're wondering, are they just thinking about it and they need to come in? And it helps the staff and the providers know how to manage those calls. So if you want the details for that, the scripting and the crisis call protocol, it's all in the workbook if you want the details on that. Pertaining to screening, as I mentioned in the last episode, the PHQ-9 is not enough. It, again, question number 9 is a proxy asking about thoughts that you'd be better off dead, but it is not specific enough to identify kids who may be at risk. The PHQ-9 may miss some of those kids. So be using either the ASK or the Columbia. And it is really important that everyone knows what the process is for the screening, what the screening is about, what's the intent of doing this in the first place, so that there's buy-in and that everyone is on alert. And, you know, my staff would say to me, hey, Dr. Gugino, I'm really worried about this kiddo in room 10, and I just wanted to give you a heads up. And as I'm looking through my EHR and I can see the results, I know what I'm kind of going into. I'm kind of prepping myself because the next step is risk assessment. That is knowing how bad is this. This is like any other condition. I use the one of certainly asthma. Just because you have a child who is having respiratory difficulty, we don't immediately send them to the emergency room. We do a risk assessment. We triage. We look at the severity of symptoms.
And it's no different for suicidal ideation. You can use the Columbia Six Questions, the short form, or you can use the Ask BSSA. Again, you have to know how bad this is. Both of these tools give you an idea of plan, intent, and means, and helps you sort through in your mind, is this a fairly low risk? You know, the kid who says, I just broke up with my boyfriend, and sometimes it would just be easier if I didn't have to think about things, versus I just don't want to be alive anymore. And in fact, I have a plan. I know where my parents' gun is. And if I was going to kill myself, that's how I would do that. That is a very different presentation, and you need to be able to sort through that. Lethal means safety counseling. This is critical to any patient who has a mental health condition, even ADHD. We need to be asking, because we know those kids are impulsive, we need to be asking, do they have access to medications? Do they have access to sharp instruments, especially, you know, if you have a kid that's cutting, what are they cutting with and how are they getting that? Is that easily accessible? And of course, firearms. So many parents who have firearms assume that their kids either one, know how to handle them safely, or two, would never touch them, or three, don't even know where they are. Studies have shown that all of those are false assumptions. Kids who have had safety training on firearms know how to use a firearm. Kids who say they would never use that or access a weapon might. And kids often know where the firearms are stored and how to get to them. So, of course, the safest is not having a firearm in the home. And if you do have a firearm, it must be stored securely in a locked, secure safe with the ammunition stored separately, and the firearm should be unloaded. This is what can make your home safer, not completely, you know, it's not a guarantee, but that increases the likelihood that it's harder to get to a weapon should I be having thoughts of suicidality. The CALM course, the Counseling Access to Lethal Means course, is on the SPRC website. And if you just type in CALM course and suicide prevention, the link is right there. It's free. It takes maybe an hour or two, but it's so helpful. It goes through motivational interviewing. And what do you do when a parent or caregiver is resistant to removing or securing a firearm, and how to talk through that. Because it's really important to let the parent know that when your child is in this state, they're not thinking clearly. And so things that they otherwise wouldn't do, they might. And we want to put barriers to access at every turn. So again, do the CALM course. Management and disposition of suicidality. So if you have a patient who is at relatively low risk, it may mean that you touch base with them and see them back in a week to talk about how they're doing. Perhaps it's something that you would refer them on to a therapy appointment and would follow up, because that's really important. If it's more of a moderate or severe, again, close follow-up. And those patients, you're more likely to really want to set up a mental health appointment. Because those are hard to access, it might be really helpful to have follow-up appointments with you. Now, again, I know you're not a mental health professional, but you are good at talking to kids. It's what we do. And so we're touching base, and we've gone through lethal means safety counseling. We've talked about the thoughts, the plan, so we can revisit those. We can also do a safety plan with these patients. And a safety plan is a way to have the patient come up with their own plan when these thoughts are overwhelming. So the first thing is just, how do I know when these thoughts are going to come? You know, every time I have an argument with my mom, I start thinking that I would be better off dead. I think of killing myself. Well, then the next step is, what are some things that I can do for myself to reduce those thoughts? Maybe it's journaling. Maybe it is watching a cat YouTube visit. So as those thoughts rise at a peak, I can start doing that activity and then the thoughts kind of diminish. The next after that, if that doesn't work, is what are some places I can go or people I can reach out to for distraction? So this would be, you know, maybe there's a coffee shop, or I like to go for a walk, or I want to go to another place where I feel safe. Maybe I'm going to go swing in the backyard, or there's someone that I can call. I always call Aunt Teresa, and she makes me laugh and makes me feel good about myself. I don't necessarily need to tell her that I'm having thoughts of killing myself, but she makes me feel better because that helps reduce suicidal ideation. And what's really important is that we help the patient articulate this in their own words, what would work for them, and then that we explore any barriers. So if someone says, I like to swing, but they don't have a swing set and they live in a high-rise apartment, okay, let's problem solve. What are other things that might work for you? After that, you know, what are the crisis resources? Who are you going to reach out to when you are, you know, you've gone through all the steps and you're still having these thoughts? Oftentimes, these are parents. Kids may say friends, and it's really important that you help elicit who are the adults in this kid's world that can be helpful. If one of the problems is arguments with parents, you may want to help them identify who are other adults. Maybe it's their best friend's mom. Maybe it's an aunt or a grandparent or a coach or a teacher, and help them sort through who would you call? You know, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, who are you going to call? And of course, you want to provide them with all the emergency contacts like 988. Emergency room contacts in your local region. Online resources can be really helpful. And you're going to share this safety plan with the parents. This is the Stanley Brown safety plan. And you're going to share it with parents. And if they're going to see a therapist, you're going to share it with them as well. And then finally, the last step of the safety plan is identifying reasons for living and making the environment safe. So again, that lethal means safety counseling is part of that safety plan. For the highest risk or imminent risk patients, I can think back on one of my patients who said, I've been thinking about killing myself. And in fact, I have a loaded rifle under my mattress and I was going to kill myself tonight. That patient needs to go to a higher level facility. Likely it's going to be an emergency room because this is a very high risk situation. Documentation is super important. You need to document throughout what your thought process is, how you arrived at that because you used these screening tools and had a conversation. HIPAA allows that you can disclose thoughts of suicidal ideation if the patient is at risk of hurting others or harming themselves. So you are protected there. And I've heard an attorney speak about suicide and that if he sees in a chart that a patient has been screened appropriately, has had a risk assessment, has had a safety plan, had coordinated care, he said the chances that I am going to seek a lawsuit against them is very unlikely. So again, documentation is really, really important. And using validated tools such as the ASK, the Columbia, the Stanley Brown Safety Plan. Coordinated care. If you are referring a patient on to a therapist, you want to make sure that that therapist knows how to talk about suicide prevention. Not every therapist is comfortable with this topic, so you need to make sure who your resources are. And you're going to want to share the safety plan with them. And I ask, you know, the patients and parents, I'd really like to talk with the therapist about why I'm sending you and get releases while they're in your office. Coordinated care might also be having a follow-up appointment with you. And this may be a much shorter appointment. And then caring contacts. Caring contacts can be a phone call, a portal message. It can be a card that is sent. but it is an outreach saying, hey, I just wanted to check back on you. And typically, this would be done within 24 to 72 hours of a disclosure of suicidal ideation, depending on where you feel the patient is. And it could be from a staff member. Maybe your MA calls and says, hey, Dr. Gugino just wanted me to call and see how things are going today. If you've talked with the family about firearm prevention, this is a good opportunity for you to say, hey, I know we talked about securing the gun or removing it from the home. Were you able to do that? And then again, problem solve with them. So those caring contexts are really important. And that's an evidence-based intervention that is effective. Just asking people, how are you doing, is really, really important. So again, the suicide prevention basics, there are companion podcasts to each part of this. Again, the screening, the risk assessment, and safety planning on the Pediatric Meltdown podcast. And you can search on the episode bar under suicide prevention and find those. And I'll include some links in the show notes as well for this episode. In closing, every practice setting needs to have a suicide prevention policy and a process. If you want to talk a little bit more about your practice and where you are in this process, let's set up a discovery call and we can chat about what your biggest pain points are and where you might like to start. And if you want a deeper dive, we can set up some consultation and I can do more of a one-on-one with you and your behavioral health team. And of course, download the workbook because it has lots of resources that will include all of the steps that I've talked with you about today. So again, this is really important, and I hope that when you're thinking about your practice transformation, that you start with assessing your setup for suicide prevention. Thanks so much, and I would love to chat with you. You can reach out on pediatricmeltdown.com, email me at pediatricmeltdown@gmail.com, or DM me on Instagram at pediatricmeltdown. So you can find me lots of ways, and I would be delighted to talk with you about this topic. Take care, and I hope you will join me for the next episode. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope this episode was helpful as you think about ways to transform mental health care for your patients. The work is challenging, but our kids need us now more than ever. Be the one to listen, to offer hope, and to make a difference. Click on the link in the show notes or head over to the pediatricmeltdown.com site for a free downloadable worksheet and a training PowerPoint to lead your staff through managing crisis calls. You can also download the Building Better Workflows workbook, a companion to the podcast, with all the tools and resources you will need to redesign your workflows. Let's take it to the next level.